Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 209 for Sunday, the 24th of March,
Sunday.
2013. I'm Tim Elliott, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Hey, Sunday.
And, of course, Phil Wilson.
Holy crap, we're missing basketball.
Yeah, I know. It's March Madness. And the U is playing, I think it's at, what, at 5?
Something yeah, like I'll be watching that. And I've got Iowa State and Ohio State on right now with the mute on. So.
And what are they at right now?
Oh, boy. Ohio State pulled out ahead 69-61. But Iowa State's making a showing. I mean, they're playing in front of a friendly crowd in Ohio somewhere. Dayton, I think. But anyway.
Well, all I can say is this is why they invented TiVos.
That's right.
So you could go back and then you can go through the commercials. You don't have to monkey with any of that stuff.
Yep.
Hey, as a guy used to make his living on commercials, don't be going through those.
Yeah, I used to work for an ad agency. Watch out now.
Hey, be careful.
And just a quick mention that Steve is not with us this week, but he'll be back next week, and we wish him well.
Yep, we sure do.
And so I guess the first story here is one that, Phil, you're very close to, and Graham, you have some things to share, I'm sure, Mobile March.
Oh, which was a great success, I think, but I am biased because I helped produce it. So
unfortunately, I didn't get to make it. Some things came up during the day, but Graham, what did you think?
I thought it was great, and I covered it for Minovate as best I could and kind of went crazy and tweeted and shot pictures and even wrote a post that I finally got up this morning. And yeah, I thought it was tremendous. A lot of energy there. And, you know, when I think of the collective knowledge of mobile that was assembled there at Earl Brown Heritage Center, there was a quite a mix of amazing people at that thing, wouldn't you say, Phil?
Yeah, it was really nice. And, you know, I can honestly say that it was probably the best and most diverse group we've had at Mobile March. You know, for years we've held that at least part of it on a weekend. We started it in 2010, and the concept was that, you know, people would take a Saturday and come learn about mobile and really to grow beyond those people that are really devoted, which tend to be more on the developer side, you know, those that are really devoted to mobile. We wanted to try it during the week this year, and I would say that it was very successful in bringing more of the variant constituencies together, you know, both developers and mobile business and those that they're developing for. And it was, I think, a really nice crowd. I was very happy to see as big a crowd and as an open a crowd to learning. And we had a great day.
So can you sort of a rundown for those of us that weren't able to attend, kind of what the big trends that were discussed are or kind of what the takeaways were?
I think that would probably be best for Graham to cover. You know, on day of when you're putting together an event, you very rarely get to participate in those sorts of things. So, Graham, why don't you go after that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I did say in my post that went up this morning that I talked a little bit about the four tracks: mobile strategy, mobile development, mobile gaming, mobile business. I tended to hang out in the mobile business, and I was kind of impressed that I think there were a fair amount of Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 kind of folks there. So you know, the enterprise IT implications of mobile, I think, was pretty well represented. I think there was a huge track, or maybe not the whole track, but there was a whole track on gaming. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of expertise there on mobile gaming, including some of the guys from W3i, now NativeX, and then the mobile strategy track was a little more marketing oriented, I think. So there's some really good sessions there as well, although I wasn't able to get into those. You know, it's hard when you're choosing between four concurrent things, and that's why I'm sure Phil and his co-organizers are trying to get these people to post their slides so we can at least go back and look at some of these things we missed. And of course, mobile development was, you know, a lot of HTML5, a lot of UI considerations, well represented, I would say, with a couple of at least two great sessions. There was Liz Tupper did a really interesting thing on Apple rejection, you know, how to avoid Apple rejection. And the biggest thing I got out of that, Phil, was she posted a link or a slide or something that showed a link to some checklist that's 300 things long.
Oh, yeah.
When you're submitting to Apple.
It's no walk in the park. 300
things on the checklist.
It's no walk in the park. And, yeah, you kind of have to be. And, you know, there's bound to be 301 things, so you'll miss that last one. But it's yeah. always a challenge. But, yeah, you know, I was really impressed by the interest and turnout at the UI discussions. We had three very pointed UI topics. Mike Bollinger did one, and we also had some other folks in some of the smaller rooms, and those rooms were packed to overflowing. I was very interested to see, because I think UI sort of, you know, spans all the constituencies again. I think, you know, you look at the developers and how they're viewing UI, and then the actual users themselves. And I think it was very exciting to see that going on.
Are developers looking at Android as a viable platform now? I mean, used to be that iOS was really the only place to make money, but as the market's growing, Android is becoming a factor. So is that, you know, were developers talking about Android?
Oh, sure. I think that they were talking about Android in great detail, probably not as pointed and specific. You know, the developer tracks were very, very broad in their nature. They had a lot to do with HTML5 and Bluetooth and things like that. So that they span, you know, both platforms. But I think that it still comes down to Apple is sort of the first choice. It's the default first choice. I can tell you that from working with Recursive Awesome that when we design, you know, build an app, the first thing the client's going to say is, you know, I want to start with iPad or iPhone. So I think it's going to evolve. I think it has to. It doesn't look like we're going to have to worry about BlackBerry again, but it will evolve, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, of course, W3i, now Native X, is very Android-oriented. And, you know, I've picked up already that everybody's looking for an Android developer. I mean, I know Mobile Realty Apps, Aaron Cardell is, LiveFront is, you know, everybody I talk to has got a posting for an Android developer. You know, developer. So I don't think there was a specific session on Android, but there was another session on jQuery that I'm sure was quite good, and Windows Phone, of course. And, you know, it was, you guys did a heck of a job pulling together 32 sessions in one day. You know,
yeah,
it was a challenge to get to a lot of it, but
it is. It is very much a challenge, but at the same time, so many of those people just stepped up. I mean, because we do an open call for speakers. We started that in November of last year, and we had a great deal of people just standing up and saying, yes, I'll be glad to present on this. And that helped a great deal. Linda Cummings did an outstanding job of actually seeking out some speakers on the business and business strategy side, especially Bob Shakai, who was our keynote speaker, who's the global head of mobile for Thomson Reuters, and an interesting cat to be sure. I think a lot of people learned some things from him, and I think it was a overall, I was very happy, and you know, you see a lot of the smaller things during the course of putting on an event, you know, name tags that didn't get printed or something like that. But I think overall, I had a great experience at the Earl Brown Heritage Center, and I really liked the venue. I thought the venue was very nice. It was big enough, yet it was fairly intimate. Maybe a little more spread out than we'd like, but I thought it was a good venue. Graham, you?
Oh yeah, I love that place. And yeah, I didn't mind walking, you know, through, you know, from one end to the other. It kind of is spread out a little bit, but it really not that bad. I mean, got us up and around, and I thought the people handled the event very well. The food was excellent, you know, and the cocktail reception. Who was it? Michael Roventine that tweeted, "Oh, they had plums for an afternoon, an afternoon snack. How classy."
That's what he said. Yeah, he stopped by the table one time. He had a plum in his hand. He said, "Wow, plums!"
Yeah, the food was excellent. The help was great. The place looks like $1 million, and you know
it really does.
I remember when it was really a farm. So they've done a hell of a job on that place. It's quite a resource. I would encourage other people to look at that as an event venue. Really, seriously, it's not that far out. Of the center of town that it's hard to get to or anything. It was very easy to get to. Well, a little easy. If you didn't know exactly what exit to take, you could get screwed up. But it's just off Highway 100 right there at 694. So,
well, thanks very much, Kevin. This is very kind of you to say, and I'm glad you could make it. And, Tim, I'm sorry you couldn't, but, you know, we'll do it again next year. And, Tim, you're right. We are trying to gather everybody's slide decks and collateral material from their presentations. They'll be available online as we get them at mobilemarchtc.com/resources. So keep an eye on that, and I'll try to make sure we tweet that out as we go. A great event, and I wanted to thank everybody who made it possible, all of our sponsors, obviously our founders, Justin Grammons, myself, Linda Cummings, and Mike Bollinger, who joined us this year in a sponsor capacity as, you know, organizing sponsors. Thanks to all of them. I think I'm very proud of the event. I think we had a great time.
Oh, yeah. I think the exhibit tables in the break area or the refreshment area were great. I had a lot of excellent discussions, and there were some really solid companies represented there, and they all had a lot of representation. So, you know, I'm sure that they got a lot out of it as well. And we all learned something or met people we didn't know before. And, you know, that's what it's all about.
No, thank you. Appreciate it. But just as sort of a dovetail in this, Tim, I think what I wanted to point to is, and Graham wrote a nice piece in Minovate about the event. And, you know, what I kind of wanted to point out is, and I mentioned this to Graham in an email this morning, I really like the way Graham wrote it with all of the personal associations with not only the people, but the place and that sort of thing. And this is just sort of an aside as far as writing a blog post. I love it when people get more personal in their blog posts rather than, you know, treating it as a news site. It was, I think, a great way of writing, and I have always appreciated that.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I did have some connections with that place, and so it's always fun to hark back to a little history too. You know.
So. Yeah.
That Earl Brown dude was an interesting guy. You can't deny that. So read the post, and you can click the links and read about him.
Well, another post you did earlier in the week, Graham, is about W3I changing their name, rebranding to NativeX.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere on me. I guess I talked to some people who knew it was coming, but I haven't really talked to the W3I people that closely lately, and I get an embargoed press release the day before, and I'm reading this thing, and I'm thinking, oh, they're announcing some new platform. And I'm getting down into the first paragraph of the release. It's like, they're changing their whole damn name. But, you know, they've done that before, and I looked back. It was 2007 when they rebranded from freeze.com to W3I. Which at the time I thought was sort of goofy for a company name. And apparently it finally dawned on them, like Rob told me in the email interview I did in the post. They just decided that it didn't really represent what they did. And now they're apparently going whole hog into this native advertising trend.
So what's the deal with Trip Hawkins becoming one of their advisors?
Well, you know, I think it's great. He's going to be a senior advisor or an advisor to the board. So he's not a board member. But it all comes from Rob being introduced to him I don't know how long ago, and getting to know him and getting to talk to him, and Tripp has apparently been a personal mentor to him. Now, I don't know how long that's been going on, but I gathered for maybe a year or so. And the funny thing is, I think he said a friend introduced him on a trip to San Francisco. So I don't know if he met him on the plane or if he met him out there somehow, but Rob and other of his people are spending a lot of time in San Francisco now, and they have offices right in the heart of downtown off of Market Street, one of the Market Street high rises. I think they're on the 30 something floor and have a view of both bridges, and you know, they're building up their presence in the Bay Area quite well, including their new VP of marketing, who joined about 4 or 5 months ago, and she ran the rebranding effort. You can read about her in my post. So apparently Tripp and others have convinced them that this native advertising is the way to go. He has some good words to say about it in the news release. They're basically saying that, you know, banners just aren't going to cut it anymore. And so it's funny, Rob mentions four systems or platforms would be a better word, that have their own advertising now, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Google, you know, and then he mentions the local Do app with their RSS feed ads. And I thought, well, he sure mentioned them in pretty good company. But the point being that, you know, just banner ads is not where it's at anymore at all, that, you know, the CPMs are way too low. It just doesn't work anymore. And, you know, platforms are going in other directions. And so they're, you know, putting forth a platform for developers to monetize their apps using their own form of native advertising. So it's a pretty big announcement, and they're going to have quite a presence at Game Developers Conference starting tomorrow. Actually, it might even start tonight in San Francisco. I know a lot of the players are there. I think there's some sort of a summit that takes place tomorrow and Tuesday where W3I will have a presence and maybe are speaking in sessions. And then the larger show floor, expo takes place, you know, the rest of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it'll be, I don't know, something like 20,000-25,000 people converge on San Francisco for this thing. So I'm sure W3I, now NativeX, will benefit greatly from their, you know, presence at that event.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting news, and we'll be plugged into that as that develops. Another big story this week that has a kind of a local flavor is Adria Richards, who used to be a local developer here in town. I met her years back at the WordPress users group, but she's since moved on to San Francisco. And this week kind of got some notoriety as while at a user conference, PyCon, tweeted about some guys that were making inappropriate comments about dongles and forking behind her. That blew up into a huge internet situation where one of the guys got fired, and she, in fact, got fired by the end of it. So it was
from her job at SendGrid, right? When she was like developer relations person or something.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is an unfortunate situation, but it's one of those things that makes you kind of think back on how kind of far we've gone, but also kind of what not to do on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that, you know, I don't think there's any question that, you know, maybe these guys were inappropriate. I try to keep it in context, but it's going to be tough to pass judgment on people on, you know, if I overhear something and take it personally, it's going to be tough to – it's very difficult. I know, you know, it's probably even more difficult for women. But at the same time, do you, you know, call somebody out for everything you overhear everywhere you go? I don't know if it's one of those things. I think it's one of those things that really should have never happened. I don't think, you know, if somebody is offended, I think they make it known to the people that have offended them, and they don't necessarily have to take it to a public forum. But
yeah, no, all of us remember, you know, years ago, back when we started our careers, how different it was. I worked in the printing industry, and I think Graham, you also had some.
I had plenty of dealings in that same industry.
Right.
Sure.
And it was a very traditional men-dominated industry. And I worked with guys that were Don Draper-esque hard drinkers, very inappropriate. Even back then, I thought it was inappropriate. And you know, this is well before we had any kind of internet or Twitter or what have you. And we would just, you know, if someone said something, you'd just call them out on it. Say, you know, I don't appreciate that. That offends me, or that offends, you know, people in general, and not to do it anymore. And you just handle it person to person. And I think the way that she handled it was by taking a picture and putting it on Twitter and then basically, you know, calling them out without having that conversation. That was where everything kind of broke down.
Yeah, the whole public shaming of an individual. You know, we've all made mistakes. We all say inappropriate things. All of us say inappropriate things. And and it's you know, the best thing you can do is make amends for it. But when it spirals out of control, where you have people hacking websites and and losing jobs, I don't think off-color jokes about dongles and forking is worth all that. Nor is it, you know, I found it somewhat ironic that, and I can't find the reference to this, but I saw early on in this story, I saw one of the tweets was, what was it? It was Adria had mentioned that she referred to the people, the guys behind her as ass clowns. And it's like, you know, I'm sorry, you can't really call somebody out for saying something inappropriate by calling them a name. You know, remember, this is something you overheard, but a name is directly pointed at somebody. And I don't think that's necessarily the appropriate response either.
Yeah. No, I think that if you kind of look back through the story, she overreacted, should have handled it there on the floor without involving Twitter and shaming and all that stuff. And from the, you know, from what I've been able to read of people that were there, and in fact the people that were involved, they apologized right away. It wasn't like they were trying to, you know, make her uncomfortable. So,
right.
If you read between the lines of her post, which is at her website, which we'll link in the show notes, which is somewhat hard to get to because there's a lot of traffic going to it these days, you know, it was on a long week. She had been, you know, on the road for 5 weeks, I think, or this was the fifth conference. So she was probably strung out, tired, and it just she just cracked, and these kind of things happen. And if, you know, if you didn't have 10 or 11,000 people following you on Twitter and you made a comment like this, it may not go anywhere. It may not be a big deal. But when you have that platform, you've built that platform over, you know, years, you've got to choose to use it wisely.
I think that, you know, the best thing that could happen here is everybody take a deep breath and step back, give everybody else their jobs back, and walk away with a lesson learned. I mean, I know that's probably, you know, I think very blue sky, but at the same time, and that's not to say that look, it's easy for, you know, here's three guys talking about this thing, and our perspective is obviously this went too far. You know, there may be people, men and women, that feel that this was completely appropriate. I just don't believe it was. But
I think everything was disproportionate.
I think so.
From the very beginning. And then the reaction on the internet was terrible. She received death threats and all sorts of other threats, which
that's insane. That's
crazy.
Just insane.
SendGrid, her employer, had a distributed denial of service attack from apparently Anonymous. So the whole thing just spiraled so far out of control.
And it was kind of crazy.
So people, think before you tweet.
Think before you think. Yeah. But that's just sort of that's an extension of think before you comment. I mean, you always have to be cognizant of your surroundings, of who you might offend. But I think we all have to temper ourselves with the fact that not everybody believes exactly the way we believe.
Right.
I'm offended on a regular basis by the NRA, yet I have friends that are members of the NRA. So, I mean, it's not like I'm going to, you know, call them out for that sort of thing. So it's just – yeah, you just have to be cognizant of what's going on around you.
Yeah, and I hope it all works out well for her and for everyone involved, and they can kind of move on and learn from the situation.
Yeah, so anyway.
So another thing, and it shows, Phil, that you are so far out in front of the technology world.
I am so cutting edge.
With you and your Pebble watch that everybody is now piling on and going to make a smartwatch.
You know, is this a good idea? Because I look around, I look around, there, you know, anybody under the age of 30 doesn't seem to wear a watch anymore. Right. And I don't know if strapping an interface to your mobile device to your wrist is necessarily the best product to invest in. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I just don't think it's a big market segment. I think it's a geek market kind of thing. I think companies like Pebble will be able to carve out a small business selling this kind of thing. But this looks like it's the next tablet, the way everyone's lining up. It was, you know, Google's going to make one, LG's going to make one, Samsung's going to make one. Of course, Apple has to make one, according to rumor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's what we don't know, though.
Is this wearable computing market, is this a huge kind of opportunity or not? And come up at Mobile March? Did anyone mention it?
I didn't hear it.
No, I don't think it necessarily came up. But it's very early on.
It's very geek market then. It's not a major consumer thing.
Well, there's no doubt it's a geek market, but geek markets are, you know, can spawn, you know, who knew Twitter was going to go beyond the geek market? So, I just don't know if it's really worth. I think wearable technology. Yeah, I think there are some opportunities out there. I don't necessarily know if it's just a watch, though.
Well, they could make. They make it a pin that, you know, women can
pin
on their,
because so
their
many women wear pins these days. So.
Right. They could like say screw you or some other inappropriate comment.
You're right.
Right. Give you like a mood meter, and they could like tweet. They could like do their own tweets to their own like pin.
Would you stop?
That's what Adria should have had. She should have had one of those, and then she should have just called them whatever she called them and turned around.
Please direct all emails to Pimpelnet.
That would be an interesting product, though, where you could like put little messages on. Well, never mind. I just don't think it's a big market. I think that, you know, companies like Pebble will do okay.
Yeah,
and there'll be a little niche, and there'll be people like Phil and maybe me that get these things. And
well, and I looked down on my wrist. I'm not wearing my Pebble watch right now. I'm wearing a good old fashioned, you know, watch.
Is it because your Pebble got bricked after shutting it down?
No, I actually haven't shut it down to find out if it will brick. But I'm not in a big hurry for that. So, but well, no, I enjoy wearing a watch not only to tell time but also of it. Is fashionable. So,
and you're saying the Pebble's not fashionable?
In a geek sort of way, sure. I think it is.
So did you have it on, strapped on at Mobile March?
Oh, of course.
Oh, okay.
I had to have the geek cred there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the only guy at the event with a Pebble.
Yeah, could be. And, you know, people were lining up to see it, let me tell you.
So I listened to a number of other technology podcasts, and there are some that are fairly well known where they're still waiting for their Pebbles.
Wow.
You know, it's maybe crazy. Maybe
they haven't taken to their email to pitch.
Maybe not. So you are in that rarefied crowd of 30,000 that have early access to the Pebble.
Well, again, I like it from a standpoint of I'm not missing things that are popping up on my my phone. And I believe, you know, I think the Gmail sync is a little bit annoying because, you know, I get something every time something comes into Gmail. And you and I both know and everything coming into Gmail is all that important. So I think that – but we'll see, you know, filters and things like that starting to be incorporated, I'm sure, as we go along. But yeah. I like the fact that I don't miss texts and I don't miss phone calls now.
Well, one of the things I do on my phone to really control those notifications is I only have priority inbox being notified.
Right.
So you can go in and you can change it from your entire inbox to priority, which mm-hmm. does some pre-filtering. So it's only presumably, you know, important stuff that you need to respond to quickly. And then another thing that's part of Android 4.2 Jelly Bean that's interesting is they have put in an ability to actually reply directly from the notification area, or you can archive it, mm-hmm. which I find very handy on my tablet. I'll pick it up. I'll see, hey, there's a couple things here. And if I'm able to just do a quick scan and then do a, you know, reply right away, right from the notification pane, I find that to be a real productivity kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think those are all great suggestions. I always worry, though, that, you know, being someone that is in the business of business, I always feel like if I just pay attention to my priority inbox, I may miss that new business, that new email that has never come to me before. So it's just sort of something that you kind of have to juggle. And I agree with you, Tim. There's some great tools out there to make it happen.
Well, another good tool, and this will keep you on the sidelines, Graham, again, is Google announced Google Keep, which is a notepad thing. It's only for Android right now, and it only works for Android 4.0, which is Ice Cream Sandwich or Jelly Bean.
I saw it demoed at lunchtime on a guy's Android phone. It looks real good.
Yeah, no, I've been using it for the last few days since it came out, and I find it to be very handy, especially on the mobile device for capturing stuff. It has voice integrated, so on my phone I can hit the thing and, you know, record something, and it keeps both the recording and it translates it into text, and it's very accurate. So I find it very handy to just jot down notes. Now, a lot of the people that have written about it online think it's an Evernote killer. And even though it does some of the same things that Evernote does, I think it's a really different sort of tool at this stage.
Right.
I mean, it may be – I'm using it for lightweight, just getting stuff into my lists or into a digital format very quickly and to remind me of stuff. I have Evernote in a different sort of workflow as a more permanent kind of thing. I do all my writing in Evernote before I paste it into blogs or wherever it appears, and keep a lot of notes and other things there. So I use it differently. A lot of other people think it's, you know, the same kind of thing. But I think, Phil, you might have put in this story about how Amalek and other influencers are kind of turning against.
I put that in. Yeah, the introduction of Google Keep was the occasion for some prominent journalist, I guess we can call him, to kind of rain down on Google on the subject of taking Google Reader away. And it's like now they don't trust Google. You know?
Right.
So
yeah.
You think we're going to get all comfortable with Google Keep and then you're going to take that away? No way. You know, no way are we going to do that. So I think Gruber was the other one, John Gruber, who came out and commented on that. So, yeah, that's an interesting story. The headline being and that Google is how you lose the influencers. So some pretty important folks are ticked off at Google. This Google Reader thing, the journalists do not like that being taken away from.
Well, God forbid, now they actually have to go out and look for stuff. It just doesn't come to their inbox.
You know how I read it? Remember Julio commented on this last week. I mean, they really depended on that thing, but they like plain vanilla text only, you know. And I saw one of the TechCrunch writers who I've met, Sarah Perez, writing about this too. And you know, like she doesn't buy the fact that Zeit came out and said, well, we created a Google Reader clone in 6 hours. You know, what's the big effing deal? And, you know, her reaction was, well, but Zeit is not a text reader, is not an RSS reader.
Right.
It's a magazine. Well, Some people prefer looking at magazines. Some people prefer plain vanilla text. You know, well, journalists, apparently, many of them really, really like plain vanilla text. But then I've read others. That guy I commented about last week, Farhad Manjoo, who writes for Slate and Wired, I think, he's never liked Google Reader. And he really likes, you know, the more modern tools, if you will, magazines, the tablet-oriented magazines like Flipboard and Zeit and so forth, which I do too. So it's all in what you're used to. But people do not like something they're really, really used to being taken away from them.
Well, I think it's the one thing that's being missed in this discussion is it's really about the plumbing and less about the service itself. The plumbing, the Google Reader API, which actually, you know, did all the import of the feeds and kept track of the state that you left it in on whatever device. That's the part that people are upset about. The presentation layer, a lot of us didn't really use it. I mean, it's just in the background it was using the Google Reader API so that we could read it on our phones and then it would sync up and we could go back on a desktop using a desktop RSS client. Like NetNewsWire is a good example that uses
And that's coming back now. Some people say NetNewsWire is going to have or already is having a resurgence.
Yeah, no, they're going to have a web version of it. I mean, they've always had the leading RSS application for the Mac, and they used to way back. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, so they did have a web version, but of course, Google Reader killed all of those. Blog lines, it killed NetNewsWire from that perspective, and it was that API that killed it, not the service itself. So,
sure,
the service itself has been out to pasture for a number of years now.
Yeah,
the API is something that Google really needs to do something about. And
right.
Their choices are they could either bolt that thing onto Google Plus, which some people are thinking they're going to do.
Sure.
Or they could just open source it and have the community pick it up, and there could be like a, you know, downloadable version of this thing, or maybe even a cloud version that people set up, and use that. Because so many services use that API to manage their feeds. It's a big loss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And obviously RSS isn't going to go away, but there are going to be some new developments that we're going to be hearing about in the next few months before Google Reader is retired in July, was it?
Right. It's July 1st. July 1st is when it goes dark. So yeah. I'm using Feedly, which still is using the Google Reader API as the back end. And I had been using for a number of months now, Flipboard. So I have, my Google Reader feeds all in Flipboard, and I just find that to be an attractive way to, you know, casually go through feeds.
Oh, absolutely.
But in my work, I go through maybe 900 stories every morning. Right as soon as I sit down, and the first hour, I kind of skim through them. And I used Google Reader for that. Now I'm using Feedly.
Okay, so what happens to Feedly when the Google Reader API goes away? What are they going to do?
They're talking about recreating it. So right now they've got a very good presentation layer. And if they can recreate that API in the background, I think they're going to be the big winner. And I think I read somewhere where they had something like 1 million new signups.
They're the big winner since the Google Reader announcement came out. Yep.
So I'm using it. And, you know, I kind of like Feedly. I do. I still haven't gotten used to it quite yet, but because I was very much accustomed to Google Reader. But
where it really shines is on the mobile devices, like on a tablet. It's a really good mobile app.
Yep.
It's a lot better than the Google Reader app on mobile.
Yep, it's nice.
Yep. So who put on these Apple stories?
Yeah, I did.
Gee, I don't know. I can't imagine.
Right. Well, anyone who's been listening for a while would know it was not Tim or Phil. not necessarily. They probably put in one or two in there.
I put in an Apple story here and there.
Yeah, oh yeah, you do. You throw us fanboys a bone once in a while. No, the one, the particularly good one is this LA Times columnist finally calling out the media for all the frenzy of first of all, how they built up app, helped build up the Apple story like mad. And then, you know, the minute things start going downhill, they're all calling for the demise of Apple, and it's, oh, it's done, it's over, they're not cool anymore, on to the next thing, you know. And he writes a very thoughtful column about how that's just a bunch of excuse my language, but it's called
our rating at Apple.
I know, now I'm gonna have to edit that out, Graham, or I'll put a beep in. How's that?
How Apple invites facile analysis. It's a very thoughtful article about the overreaction of the media, and I kind of been expecting a story like this to come out. And I must say, I wasn't a follower of this guy, but he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and columnist and author, and apparently writes regularly in the LA Times. And I think it's worth a read. And by the way, he does talk about where Apple's going, and you know, will we really be getting a smartwatch or a TV? And, you know, we don't know. Nobody knows. And that's part of the media frenzy problem, is the fact that no one knows what's going on with Apple just makes the problem even worse, because people just blather on about crap they don't know about. And, you know, he talks about how, you know, nobody out there knows what's going on. None of the experts you see on CNBC, none of them. You know, it's all just a bunch of talk. So, you know, you have to remember that.
Before we get off that, do you guys listen to Horace Dedue's podcast?
I only listen
to one
podcast.
No, but he's quoted in the story, I believe.
Yeah, no, he's one. He's the principal out of Simcoe, and he was one of these financial guys, analysts out of Nokia.
Yep.
And now he's at a Simcoe. He has his own gig called the Simcoe, and he basically looks at the entire mobile industry through the lens of Apple, and he really crunches the numbers and goes at this thing. So when there was the meltdown earlier this year, he really spent a long time on his podcast really breaking it down and coming up and saying, you know, these guys are not in crisis. The fundamentals are very strong, and it's just the market is just overreacting to what they think is going to happen, because, you know, the aura of Steve Jobs and probably what Steve left with as far as pipeline is starting to dry up. And there's this expectation, I think, in the market that Apple is going to, kind of not be a dominant force anymore.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's largely unfounded when you look at the performance of the company and how much they do dominate mobile.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just unfrickin' believable when you look at the numbers. And so this story, I thought, was just particularly well written. And any quotes Gruber in it, who of course is pro Apple, but Dedue as well, he quotes, and of course people wonder, you know, about Tim Cook, and can he really cut it, you know? Well, he did a couple of interesting things, and the other story I slipped in is this acquisition. You know, people are saying he's not doing anything with Apple's cash. Well, he just unloaded 20 million of it, which is an extremely tiny amount of what they're sitting on, but to acquire Wi-Fi Slam, which is the indoor location company in the Bay Area, I believe. The Wall Street Journal just posted on this last night, I think.
Yeah.
So a weekend announcement here that Cook is actually spending a little bit of money. The other thing I didn't put in, which you guys probably have something to say about, is what did you think of him hiring back the guy from Adobe? What's his name? The CTO from Adobe, who used to work for Apple. Kevin Lynch?
Kevin Lynch, yeah.
Yeah. That got some very strange reaction from, well, Gruber. To begin with, he thinks he's a bozo because of his support of Flash. And so there was backlash of him being hired. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's at Adobe. and you know, Flash is a major product, but he came out of Macromedia.
Yes.
Right. So, right. And I can't remember. Did Flash come out of? I think Flash came out of Macromedia as well. Right. Because there was.
I can't remember the very beginnings. Yeah, I guess it did. It came out of their predecessor company, which was called what?
I think it was Macromedia, because that. Yeah, so I think that he was just so steeped in that, and it doesn't. I mean, you're working for freaking Adobe, right? You're the CTO of Adobe. What else are you gonna say? You're not gonna say, "Oh yeah, Steve Jobs is totally right. Flash is crap on mobile." Right?
He couldn't.
I mean, this guy is a smart guy, right?
Yeah.
So I think this is a huge and if you look at what he's been saying over the last couple of years, he's not been the fanboy for Flash, even working at Adobe. So I think this is a major kind of thing that affects Adobe more than it affects Apple.
Oh, yeah, and he worked early in the Apple days with Steve Jobs. I forget what he worked on. Do you remember what he was working on? It would have been back in the – would it have been late 80s or early 90s or something? I don't know. But he had a history with Apple. So now he's back, and, you know, my first thought was, oh, my God, they're not giving him Scott Forstall's old position.
But they aren't at all. No, I'd be very surprised. No, he's working for Bob Mansfield on some super secret thing. So,
right.
Maybe it's the Apple Watch. Maybe he's going to be the guy for that.
You never know.
Hey, what's that on your wrist, Kevin? Well, Tim, look at this. We've just reinvented the watch. All right. Well, I think we've exhausted all the topics this week. What's coming up as far as events?
Well, we've got a big slate of them. There's no doubt about it. We got WordPress MSP coming up this week at the Nerdery.
Yep.
Mini Bar on April 6th at Best Buy headquarters. So I would imagine tickets are gone for that.
I think they are. I think they're, you have to pay for them now.
Only the first batch. Don't they let them out in batches so they don't run out like all at once? I would bet we'd see another batch or two being released.
Well, okay. keep your eyes peeled then.
Yeah, the only surefire way to get in though was pay the $100 to be a community supporter, which I did, and you know, so you don't have to sit and watch your.
Whoa, wait, back it up, Graham. You paid?
Yes.
Instead of buying a Pebble watch, he paid for to support Minibar.
God love you. Yeah. God love you.
I want to be sure of getting in, and you know, I figured, gosh. How many years have I been going free to those things, you know?
You know, you're right. You are exactly right.
Right. Pay your dues. There's a couple of other things I found interesting, so I put them in. The Nonprofit Technology Conference is happening April 11th through the 13th at the Hilton, and I'd never even heard of this thing before. Have any of you guys?
No.
Huh. Could it be a first-time event or not?
It says 2013 – Nonprofit Technology Conference, and it's a multi-day thing, and it's at a big hotel where it's going to be expensive. So it's got to be something that's, if you're in the nonprofit space, it's probably something that everyone goes to.
Yeah, it looks like they got a ton of sponsors, including Microsoft and MailChimp and lots of big names. I wonder if it's a purely local event. It probably not.
No,
I don't know.
May attract other nonprofits from around the country.
It looks like it's out of Portland, so it must maybe it travels around, or maybe it in fact it's a national event being held
here
yeah, this
that's,
year.
That's probably
what's going on. Because this looks pretty big.
Then another mini fair maker DIY exposition. So this is the maker folks.
Yeah, I want to see that.
All the Arduino devotees will be out there. You should wear your Pebble when you go, Phil.
Okay, I will.
So that's on the 13th and 14th.
Should I wear clothes with that too, or just the Pebble?
You might make an impression if you did that. So maybe, Phil, it depends on the weather, but maybe like a loincloth, a tasteful.
So something tasteful, something elegant.
Yeah. And of course, your native headgear as well.
Okay. All right. Oh, there's WordCamp coming up.
Yeah, at the end of April. It's a two-day thing. So So I've got to get more on top of that. I know they've done call for speakers and whatnot. I'll have to see what's going on there. But that's going to be a big deal.
What is WordCamp? I don't get what.
WordCamp?
WordCamp for WordPress.
Oh, WordCamp. Okay, where I'm jumping ahead one here.
So WordCamp is sort of an unconference for WordPress. So we've done a few of these now. I think this is the third one that will be here in the Twin Cities. But this is the first time it's been a two-day event. So.
Where's that going to be held?
You know what? I don't know. I think it might be at Best Buy again. But
Let me look.
Does it draw a big crowd? I bet.
Oh yeah, no, it does draw a big crowd.
Minneapolis Marriott City Center.
Wow,
ooh, that's even bigger.
Wow, this is a big deal.
And this is really kind of nice. Wait a minute, that's the discounted hotel rates.
Nice looking.
I think it's at the
Public Library. It's the Public Library.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Well, they have very nice facilities there.
It's WordCamp and BuddyCamp. So WordCamp is Saturday the 27th. BuddyCamp is Sunday the 28th.
That's where you bring your buddy.
Now, what is BuddyCamp?
BuddyPress.
It's all about BuddyPress, which is the WordPress-based social network software.
Oh, okay.
So.
And that same week, that same weekend is actually Sunday and Monday is another mobile event, which is up in Fargo. That looks like it's the Midwest Mobile Summit, I believe.
Yeah,
very similar in scope to what Mobile March has been doing.
Yeah. I think they were inspired by Mobile March, obviously. Yeah, the guys that are running that sound like they've really got a lot of energy and a lot of good speakers lined up already. And, you know, there's a big Microsoft connection up there, and they're going to have some honchos from Microsoft speaking at the event as well. So, that sounds like it could be a good one.
Yeah.
Sunday and Monday events. You can
Sunday
go
and
on,
Monday. That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, you can go on Sunday afternoon, and they probably have a reception Sunday night. And then I think it goes part of the day Monday and ends at about 3:30. So people that want to maybe drive back to the Twin Cities can still do so, you know. So I think they've thought it out pretty well. It looks good. They have a nice site up there, and they're still looking for speakers too.
Yep.
So good for them.
Spring conference from the High Tech Associations on the 30th.
Yeah.
And then the I.O. Festival, which none of us are going to unless...
Because we can't afford a ticket. Sir.
Well, we're still waiting for the press pass.
Yeah. Graham is still waiting for the blogger
crickets.
Pass.
It's been crickets for 2 months.
Nothing. I heard nothing.
Hey, but it's June, so maybe they'll send you something.
Well, they better, because I know they listen to this podcast every week.
Well,
they
if they do and they know what's good for them, they should
Everybody
send you.
Everybody in tech does who knows what's good for them, right?
Oh, we're so self-absorbed.
We love ourselves.
Well, listen, that's gonna do it. We got lots of stuff to talk about next week as well. So we'll see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yeah.
Doctor, give me what I need. I got an insatiable hunger. I'm trying to feed. 'Cause no matter how much I take in, I can't get enough. And no matter what I put out, it's not good enough. Always just a little touch away from the perfection that I seek. Will you take me there? I can go anytime, any way, anywhere, because if we leave real soon, oh, we might have time to enjoy the afternoon. Oh, driver, let me out of the car.
You gotta slow this vehicle down now before we get too far. Cause no matter how much I travel, I can't go fast enough. Yeah. And guess if I'm coming or going, might just call my bluff. Always just a little touch, truth hiding behind those telling eyes. Will you take a leaving? I can go anytime, anyway, anywhere, because if we leave real soon, oh, we might have time to enjoy the afternoon. Time to enjoy.